Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the podcast. I am your host, Shane Told. Just like every single week, this is Lead Singer Syndrome. I talk to other lead singers about what it's like to be the front man or front woman of a band. And we have a very awesome episode this week with Bear Reinhart of Need to Breathe, a band that is kind of under the radar a little bit, I think. A lot of people associate them with the Christian scene, and yes, they are a Christian band. However, they're pretty damn popular. Platinum selling, Grammy nominated, millions and millions of streams, probably billions of streams if we're being honest. And what a career they've had over the past 20 years. We talk about that. We talk about his successful college football career, which is rad, touring with Taylor Swift, touring with Faith Hill and Tim McGraw. This guy has done a lot of stuff, and it was so great to have him on the show. I can't wait for y'all to hear this. Before we get into that, I want to remind you, as I do most weeks, you can get in touch with me. You can send me an email. My email address is leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. I read them all. I have been very busy dealing with all sorts of things in my life over the past couple of weeks. Nothing bad, nothing bad. Everything's fine. But I do try to get back to everyone. Sometimes I do much better than other times, but I will read them regardless. I have some news. My band Silverstein, we're playing our first concert live in the flesh in more than 5.5 months. It is a drive-in concert in Ancaster, Ontario. We're having our good buddies in Rarity open up for us, and it's going to be very different. I never thought in my whole life I would be playing a drive-in show, but desperate times, desperate measures. It's going to be super cool. If you are in Ontario, I don't think Americans can cross the border, unfortunately, to come up. It would be really awesome if they could. Hey, maybe they'll let you. I don't know. But regardless, we are doing the show September 25th, Ancaster, Ontario. We're going to have the sound piped in to your FM radios. There's going to be food. There's going to be merch. But of course, it will be socially distanced. It's going to be a good time. I'm excited. We have 40-foot screens on either side of the stage. You're going to be able to see what's going on. It's going to sound awesome because the company is bringing in all the sick production. So get your tickets now. I don't have a link. Just Google it. I'm sure it'll come up. Silverstein Drive-In Concert, September 25th, Ancaster, Ontario. It is super, super exciting. We also put out a new video, too, for an alternate version of our song, Infinite. Why don't you look that one up as well? I want to thank everybody for tuning in to this episode. If it's your first time, please go back, check out the other 239 episodes that I have out. And if you do want more, if you do want to support this podcast, check out the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club. The link for that is leadsingersyndrome.com/all access. And for just a few dollars a month, it really does help us keep this thing going for free, keep the lights on, deal with all the expenses. And of course, you get a bunch of stuff, perks, merchandise, access to an incredible community of other fans of the show, more access to me. I do question and answer sessions and live streams and all kinds of stuff. So check that out, leadsingersyndrome.com/all access. All right, that about does it for the intro. Let's get into it with Bear of Need to Breathe. Brother, let me be your skeleton. Never leave you alone. I can be the one you call when you know. Brother, let me be your fortress when the night winds are driving home. Be the one to light the way, bring it home. All right, I'm here with Bear of Need to Breathe. It is so nice to have you on the show, man. How you holding up?
I'm doing good, man. Considering, I think yeah, everybody is probably answering the same way, but good days and bad days.
Yeah, you know, like I get so many different answers
to the same question. And it's kind of surprising, you know, like we're all lead singers on this show. That's what this podcast's all about. We all kind of do the same thing, but we do it in a lot of different ways. And, you know, coming from a guy like you that's been doing Need to Breathe so long, you know, a new solo project, and you've really been, you know, pretty much like go, go, go for the better part of 20 years, let's say. Is the break kind of nice?
Yeah, it's. I mean, there's definitely been really positive things about it. I think it's forced me to, you know, obviously be home way more than I ever have. My family is probably sick of me by now. but I think, you know, there's just things that you get very soft on the road. You know, I think for me anyways, a lot of people do things for you all the time.
Right.
You don't have to worry about where your meals come from and you don't have to clean up really anything, you know, just, you just kind of, so being here, it was tough at first, to be honest. And it's been really rewarding. I feel like you kind of forget how much you enjoy that part of life.
No, totally,
and,
man.
You know?
Yeah, like certain things. Like I've gotten pretty good at cooking. And, you know, because I've never had to cook this much in my life, you know?
Yeah, totally.
I've never been home. I've never been home for it's been 5 months. I don't think I've ever been home, you know, for 5 months without, like, at least, you know, either going on tour or, like, making a record or something, you know? So
yeah, for sure.
It's pretty wild. Well, man, first time on the show, so much to talk about, and I'd love just to dive back into the beginning of your life a little bit because, you know, you have such an interesting story, you know, where you grew up, how you grew up, you know, all the way leading up to your college football career, which is wild, you know, and here we are so many years later now, you know, with millions of records sold and, you know, a very successful side project that I want to talk about. And of course, the new stuff that's coming out. But let's talk about those early days. It seems like football was really ingrained into you, you know, with your family and everything. But I'm more interested in kind of how music was in your household.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. My dad was a trumpet player growing up and would play with Roy Clark and Glenn Campbell and all these people. So really was from like the music business side of things, even though by the time, you know, I was around, he was a preacher, you know. So he was aware of the rock and roll world and all that. Mom was a piano teacher. Their first job that they got when they first got married, where they were choir directors at a church. So like music was all around my house. And for whatever reason, it took a while to sink into me. I loved music early, you know, but I just was never really interested in playing it. I wanted to play music, and it probably was all the piano lessons, the kids that came over and played those horrible songs during piano lessons my whole life. I was just like, I don't want any part of this. So I think it kind of, you know, it's funny. Like when I went to college and I was probably 16 or so when I first started playing guitar and writing songs kept a long time. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I had to go in there and beg my mom to teach me, you know, theory things that I should have known when I was much younger, way later.
I know you're an accomplished guitar player, obviously. Are you an accomplished piano player too?
Accomplished might be like a strong word for what I do on piano, but I write songs on piano and I play some of the songs live. It's been funny because I've been forced into it. I never thought I would ever play on stage piano and that kind of thing. And I've done a little bit of that mostly because I wrote a song.
Right.
And then, you know, it gets on the record and it's like, oh crap, somebody has to play this. So yeah, I do it that way. I'm funny about that. I've got a piano in my studio right now that I write a lot of songs like B or B flat. And so I'm so bad at piano. I try to write in C most of the time. So I'm having the whole piano tuned down to B flat.
is that a thing? I've never heard of that.
The guy's giving me a really hard time about it, the piano tuner, but it's going to be a thing. It's taking a little bit of time. He's like, it might take a year or two to get it all the way down. I'm like, let's take your time. Let's do it.
That is so funny. Yeah. That's exactly the same. I'm horrible, horrible piano player. And I was just talking about this the other day. I'm a guitar player, right? And I think it's because when you play guitar, you know, you don't use your thumbs when you're fretting the fretboard at all, right? It's all just your four fingers. So when I get to a piano and I have to use my thumbs, I don't have the coordination. And obviously it's very important to use your thumbs when you're playing, and I can't.
Right.
So, and it's funny you say that too. I was just recording some vocals like last week, And, you know, I'm in the studio warming up, and there was no guitar around. All there was a piano. So I'm like, oh, geez, here we go. Well,
yeah,
here goes my best. It's going to be in the key of C, which for my range kind of works at least. So
There you go.
I'm lucky that way. Wow. So, this football thing is interesting because, you know, I'm a big sports guy, and I don't get a lot of lead singers that had actual sports careers. It wasn't like this was you played in high school a little bit or whatever, or you even played in college and you rode the bench. You were a star player for a Division I college. I mean, you won awards, you set school records. This wasn't like, you know, hey, this is no joke.
Yeah. Yeah, it was serious. I mean, it seems like a crazy lifetime ago, you know, but I'm a huge sports fan. So it's really fun to think back about that. And I don't get to talk about it very much anymore. And honestly, my wife doesn't even let me hold, you know, have any of the things around the house from back then. So
I kind of
forget. I'm serious. She's like, well, it's a little tacky to have the trophy and the whatever, you know, so we just have, I've kind of forgotten about it until, you know, somebody brings it up, but it was really fun, man. It was just a really awesome time of my life. And the camaraderie you have is a lot like being in a band, but you know that it's just, but the discipline was obviously a little bit crazier. In college football, it was really fun. We had, because of the pandemic, I had a Zoom call with some buddies I played with recently, and you know, it's like, yes, like we were all together, you know, again. It was really fun.
Absolutely. That's like such a cool thing that you were able to do in your life. But I just imagine, you know, I went to college too for a few years, and we're about the same age. And at the time I went, I found it very difficult to be balancing, you know, my academics and, you know, parts of my social life, you know, going to college and all that. Also trying to get my music kind of, you know, up and running and playing shows on the weekends and whatever. But, you know, you were doing that on top of playing football full time. I just imagine that must have been a crazy whirlwind in very formative musical years for you. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it was. And honestly, I mean, I joke, it's like the academics is what took the backseat, obviously, in that scenario. but it was crazy. The school that I went to was really, there was a quarterback there before me that was a songwriter. And so I think he kind of opened some doors, you know, with the coaches about like what that might mean.
Oh,
and so it was really, they were really cool about stuff. Like I remember, you know, after a game on a Saturday, I would go play a show. And they would let me get in the van with the band instead of ride the bus back with the team. So stuff like that. I think we were probably playing 60 or 70 shows a year while I was in college. Not a lot of study time, obviously, but it was a formative time. I mean, you know, that time when you're like taking in music for the first time, really, you know, where you can go to shows and all that. It was life changing for me.
So to back up for a second, you know, you say you didn't start playing guitar or writing songs till you're 16 years old. That's, you know, that's fairly late. What was there band, a specific artist or song or album or something you got turned on to at that time that said, you know what, like I'm going to pick up a guitar, I'm going to try this out myself.
You know, honestly, what got me into it, which is crazy to think, because I was a big, you know, like Black Crowes, Tom Petty fan, all those kind of things musically. And even before that, you know, a lot of like rap and those, you know, I was just all over the place.
Sure.
My dad was a preacher, like I said, and we had a job, me and my brother, on the weekends to clean the church, which was involved vacuuming and like all the whatever.
Right.
And somebody left a guitar on the stage, and they had little chord sheets of how to play these songs. And all those songs were so simple, you know, it was three chords and a whatever, but it was like a little picture of where to put your fingers. And honestly, I just was like, oh, that's kind of neat.
It beats cleaning the church, I guess, right?
Exactly. Exactly. So that's really what got me into it. And it wasn't until probably a few years later where I saw the Black Crowes for the first time, saw Ben Harper for the first time, you know, all that Ryan Adams, all that, you know, just like a lot of those kind of things. Really formative, you know, in terms of like, okay, I can play electric guitar and this is what I want the band to look like or sound like, feel like.
Right. No, that's awesome. And something good happened. I mean, it worked out, you know. Maybe it had to do with just the success you had in your life. I mean, in football and everything, maybe you were given some kind of drive. I don't know. No one knows the answer to that question. But you guys got signed to a big label, you know, not a Christian label, not a, you know, indie label at all, Atlantic Records. And I love to ask people about the how did you get signed story, especially when it's that era. You know, when you're talking about big contracts and, you know, all the A&R guys are from, they've probably got stories about Motley Crue and, like, you know, it's such a weird time. So tell me about that. How did you guys get signed?
You know, it was a bizarre time. We had met these, we kept bringing A&R guys down. Like, there was interest, and it was like, what show could we come to? And our biggest club show was probably an hour from our house or so. But like 300 or 400 people would come out to those shows, and it was always just a good atmosphere, you know, to have that kind of thing. And I remember us meeting some guys we really didn't like, you know, just like like you're saying, like just some really like sort of greasy kind of, I wasn't great. And then you get and you meet some people that you do like. And then the next step is you go to New York and you showcase or whatever. And it was hilarious for us because we were so small town that New York was like not a cool place to go for us at the time. Like it was just really uncomfortable. And I remember they like some label, I think it was Virgin Records at the time, took us to this restaurant, you know, it's like really expensive Asian restaurant or something. And like none of us knew what to order. So we all ordered chicken fried rice. And you know what I mean? It was just one of these, like they're spending out the big bucks, you know, for these guys. Like they would have been better off taking us to freaking McDonald's or something.
I know.
And they did this thing. They brought us by and they had Rob Thomas actually come to the bar at the restaurant. And it was like,
wow.
Yeah, funny.
Bringing in the big guns.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I guess his mom is from South Carolina or he is or something. And so there was a tie there somewhere. And so they brought him in I remember him saying, he's like, whatever you do, don't sign with these guys.
So that backfired on them.
Yeah, totally. I have no idea what that connection was all about or who he owed, you know,
but, that's so good.
Yeah, pretty funny. We ended up, you know, finding a guy that had signed a lot of Southern bands. I mean, he signed Collective Soul and this guy, Evan McCain, who's from Greenville, South Carolina, and just, you know, the Hootie and the Blowfish stuff and all that. There were some guys that were like, okay, at least we know they come from the same region as us. It makes some sense.
Right.
Who was the
A&R guy, if you don't mind me asking?
Kim Stevens.
Kim Stevens. I don't know Kim Stevens. Yeah. No, I knew a few people at Atlantic at that time, mostly the West Coast people, like Tom Storms and Kevin Williamson. I knew them because I was in a band that was getting kind of courted by Atlantic. So I'm always very interested in especially Atlantic Records at the time because they were just so massive.
Man, it was great. Yeah. I mean, and we've always been really strangers on that label in a way. It's like it never made total sense.
No.
But it's been, you know, it was awesome because he took a chance on us in a lot of ways, I felt like. And of course, like we make the first record and we come home, we went to England to make it and we come home and everybody gets fired or leaves.
Of course. Yeah.
So, and then we're like, well, maybe we should leave, you know? And they're like, no, you can't leave. So, it's kind of a classic story from that time. What's crazy is that after that, you know, everybody who has pretty much been there ever since, which is kind of, so like, it took us a couple of records to get our feet under us. It felt like there. But I mean, it's unheard of really for a label to be, you know, have the same people at the top for that long.
Totally. Well, it's such a chaotic time in the music industry when you guys started to, you know, put out your first few records, right? This is like right before it was like when CDs were not selling quite as well and digital hadn't really started yet and streaming wasn't a thing. So, you know, you had this really, really strange time. So, you know, for you guys to have so much success, you know, earlier in your career, I mean, and continue on, it is difficult because a lot of bands fell through the cracks. And I don't know what that speaks to. If maybe, you know, you say you felt like a stranger on the label, you know, maybe it was better than a lot of other situations other bands on other labels had. Of course, you know, you don't really know that. But, you know, I guess to ask you a question, I always felt like Need to Breathe was always sort of under the radar. Do you agree with me on that?
Oh yeah. I mean, I say this to people all the time. I'm like, it's when, especially at a big concert, you know, if we're playing whatever Greek theater or something, I'm always like, we're the biggest band that none of your friends know, you know, who we are. And I think that's true. I think it's really crazy how, you know, and that's a lesson we learned early. I think, you know, when you're going around and you're touring and you're playing to like 50 people in Boston or something, It's like, man, we don't need all of Boston to like us. We just need a couple of hundred people. And I was like, demographic is so small. Like, it could be all the left-handed tennis players that only wear one shoe. You know, if we could get them to like us. So I think that was kind of like a realization to us, but it's kind of been our fate in a lot of ways. It's like, man, the people that are into our band are just like over, like kind of psycho about it. And the other people have no idea.
No, I know. That's totally how it is. I mean, that's a good realization, you know, to start with those small goals. I remember touring in the early days, and I think we had our first guarantee. It was like our first guarantee that was $1,000. And, you know, of course, it was like all the other shows were paying us like $150 or $250. And then we had the one show that was like $1,000. I was like, man, if we could only get $1,000 every show, like, we could do this forever.
Yeah. Totally.
And, you know, now $1,000, like, we, you know, it's so little when you have add up all the expenses and everything, you need.
Yeah.
But it is really just like you said, you don't need to be this huge band that everyone knows about. Like, if you talk about someone like Taylor Swift or Tim McGraw, you know, they're all over the place. Everyone knows them. And, you know, those are artists that you've toured with. And I always, whenever I see bands like, you know, your kind of name underneath, you know, this massive name, I always think to myself, like, how is that going for them? You know, like, in the grand scope of it, because sometimes you're playing like early and sometimes like the lights are on, like, you know, people are getting ushered into the arena and the like fucking lights are on and you're playing and the sounds like shit. And, you know, it's like, how is that? Because I don't always talk to artists that have toured with, you know, Taylor Swift and Tim McGraw and Faith Hill.
Yeah, I mean, it's tricky because I think they're all unique, you know, experiences, because I do think that's true. I mean, your production can be terrible or the setup is terrible. Mostly in those scenarios, like those two especially, you know, we had great setups. Taylor was awesome to us. We were direct support on that and felt like pretty much all the seats were filled by the time we played. You know, they let us use some production and stuff like that. I will say, you know, I think I tell people, other, you know, kids that are in bands coming up, it definitely is not as helpful to me, you know, how big and commercial the thing is. It's way better if the stuff is like, you know, I think our biggest things we got were like clubs that we played for, you know, 2,000 people we were opening up for. It felt like that turned into more tickets than it did when we played the Garden, you know, two nights in a row or whatever. So, which is just crazy to think about, but I do think there's a lasting connection, and a lot of people want to have the story, you know, that they saw you in the club or whatever. So you feel like you do kind of build out from that. But it was the Taylor Swift tour is, you know, as an example, was really tough. It was, younger fans, obviously this is several years ago. So this was before she became a total pop star. There was like some country stuff in there. There was like some very, I don't know, just very young girls were at the show screaming and like, if you just felt like they had her on their lunchbox, but they didn't know if they liked the music, you know what I mean?
Right.
And so we were this, especially at the time, we were like this rock and roll kind of like, you know, we were trying to be rock and roll and rebellious and all that. And it was just not working. Right. And so I think the first 20 or so shows, you know, were okay and felt, but we just like really, we learned a lot of lessons from it because Taylor is so professional and so great and works really hard at it and kind of does the thing. But we also kind of like, I don't think that's exactly what we want to do.
Right. I know we're talking about something that happened like almost 10 years ago, but did you try to dictate your set list to those fans, or did you just kind of get up there and kind of rock?
No, we did. We tried to like keep all elements of ourselves in a 6 minute, 30 minute set. You know what I mean? It's like really hard to do. But we tried to like make it a little bit of arena thing. And I think honestly, probably the biggest takeaway, you know, we had from that was how to relate to a bigger audience. I mean, we had never been, you know, on where it's the screens are basically just cutting your face off, you know, so you can't tell what's happening with your body.
Right.
I was like, man, I would watch the video back. I'm like, all they see is us and we're moving all around. You can't tell.
Right.
So I think some of that was really important, and how to talk to an audience slowly and all that. I mean, when we were a club band and theater band, we might say five words all night. So to be able, you know, to introduce yourself to an audience and introduce the songs well, and like make it mean something, you know, we learned a lot.
Sure. No, it reminds me a little bit of my band went on tour with Avril Lavigne in Japan.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're a heavy band. You know, we scream and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
So getting that tour, we kind of laughed at the offer and then said, fuck it, let's go, you know.
Yeah, I mean, see like, what happened. Yeah.
So we went over there, and I remember we were doing, it was a whole, like, it was like 2 weeks in Japan, which is a lot, you know. Like, we were playing every little, you know, not little, like arenas, but like, you know, we were playing, usually it's not just Osaka and Tokyo or maybe Nagoya. We played like Hiroshima and we played, you know, all these other little places. But I remember the first couple shows we played, I think it was three nights in arenas in Nagoya. And after like the third one, we were like, yeah, this just isn't like, these people don't seem to care, you know, and we're trying to play like our softer songs. So we said, you know what, like for this fourth show, let's just come out with a bang. Like, let's play like we would, you know, like we were opening for, I don't know, Converge or something. So we start playing, and it was went way better. Like, I don't know if there was more sincerity on our part, but it got so funny because, you know, we're talking about little Japanese girls there to see Avril Lavigne. They've never heard a band like us. So and then it was so funny. Every time I would scream, they would cheer, you know, like they were such like, a weird
thing.
Yeah,
I'm into this.
And then for the rest of the tour, we just went and we just did that. And I don't know how much we really got out of it, but, you know, it's just funny. The fish out of water thing can, you know, it can work and it cannot work, you know.
Yeah, for sure. And I think we kind of told ourselves by the end, we were like, look, we might be the first rock and roll experience these people have. You know, it's like they're 12 years old and they don't really know, they haven't been through enough life to understand what the song is about yet, but they, you know what I mean? But they like the energy and the aggression of it and all that. So, that was another, that's a great lesson, I think.
There's always the gateway, you know, idea too, right? Like not everybody there at a pop concert is going to listen to pop their whole life. They're going to discover other genres of music, and maybe for the first time they heard Need to Breathe and went, huh, like this is cool. Yeah. I like the sound of distorted guitar. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we definitely, I run into people all the time. I did not think at the time it was that great for us. And honestly, it ended up being so many shows and whatever, even though they were so like, honestly, I can't say this enough. Like Taylor was so nice to us. I mean, we would never, I don't know if we'd be as nice to openers as she was to us. So, but like, wow. Great, you know, I don't know where I was going with that. Just lost my train of thought.
That's
sorry.
Okay. It happens to me all the time. Did you back then, you know, Taylor obviously wasn't that, she was still big, but not like she is today, like an actual absolute powerhouse. Did you see that coming?
Yeah.
Like just with her whole thing? Like, did you know she was going to be pretty much the biggest artist in the world?
Yes. I think so. I mean, it's crazy to think, cause we were playing, even then we were playing stadiums. I mean, there was probably 10 stadiums on the tour yet.
Oh my goodness.
And like, you know, I think five nights at Staples and places. I mean,
oh,
it was
my goodness. I didn't know. Wow.
Nutty.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's just crazy to think she's been that big for that long now. That's.
Yeah. Amazing. I mean, she wasn't very far into her career when that happened, you know, it's just that she was really that big. But just their whole organization, the way they treated it, you could tell like this is things going to last. Like it's super consistent, and it's really hard to do that over that many shows and that many different kind of venues and all that. Just, it was pretty wild. I think she had 20 buses, maybe 20 trucks.
Yeah. It's just insane.
So just parking is hard enough. Yeah,
absolutely. So I want to talk about the new stuff. So you got a new record coming out of body August 28th. Is that right?
Yeah.
And so that's coming up pretty soon, man. Time has been flying by the last few months. So talk to me about this record. I mean, putting it out at a time like this, it's, you know, I don't know if it's good or bad. I've had, you know, both answers talking to people. You know, obviously you can't go out and tour it. I know you're doing some other, you know, interesting stuff with, you know, your what is it? What did you call it? Celebrating Out of Body, a fully immersive concert experience. So talk to me all about that, like what your whole plan is here for this, you know, I guess album launch.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it is weird. As you think about the live show, and we're such like production band and all that, just like it really sucks to have the record coming out and not be able to go out and do it like you want right away. Saying that, it just felt like the time when people need music, and we're that kind of. I mean, that's kind of what we do. Is like, you know, we want to make music people live to and can lean on in tough times, and it's inspiring in different ways. And so, I think that's something. It wasn't much of a question for us. Like once we got the record done, I was like, this thing needs to come out now and we'll figure out the rest of it later. So, Yeah, we're doing this live stream sort of thing. We've been trying to come up with what to call it because it's really not that exactly. We'll be in a studio and multiple cameras and, you know, so it should sound good and all that, but we're not going to look at the camera. We're going to look at each other. So we're going to have like conversations between songs and just let it kind of roll. Like all your people are going to be a fly on the wall.
No, totally.
To the experience. So I think it'll be fun.
Yeah, I think that's the right approach. You know, like sometimes I'm hearing about bands, you know, and they're like, oh, we're going to play this live stream and we're going to be in a venue and we're going to be playing like 30 songs. And it's like, do I really want to watch a band on my phone play 30 songs in a row with like, you know what I mean? Like there's something missing, you know? So I think when you can put a band in an environment where it's like, okay, this is real. This is, you know, them together playing their songs, you know, telling stories, you know, talking about, especially when they're new songs that have just come out, you know, there's probably lots to, you know, inform people about. To me, that's a lot more interesting, you know, and you got to put another element in if you're going to take so many elements out, right? Like, it's not going to be loud. It's not going to, you know, there's not going to be a bunch of people around you. It's not going to be, you know, people all huddled together. So I think that that's really cool that you're taking a different approach like that.
Yeah, I hope it works out. I mean, I think we'll definitely make some mistakes on there and it'll be, you know, kind of interesting, but I think we want that, you know, I mean, like we felt like we needed to do something like that to really complete the process of making a record. And, you know, we've always kind of joked, like people used to tell us, you know, when it's 10 people in there, play it like it's 10,000. And we were always like, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Cause we're like, if somebody's cell phone rings and everybody hears it, you should act like you heard it. You know what I mean? and so I thought for us, it was always like, no, you play to the room. Like if people are into it, they're into it. You kind of feedback. It's like a conversation you're having.
Right.
So how do we do that now online, you know, when you can't see anyone and you're not looking at your phone playing and whatever. So we do our best.
Right. No, I picture you in like an intimate environment with an acoustic guitar, you know, like maybe a VIP thing, like 20 people circled around you sitting on the floor and you're playing and you just come out with like, what the fuck is up, South Carolina?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like everyone would be like, ah, God, get me out of here. Exactly. So, okay, well, we got a few more minutes. Talk to me about this record. So you've put out 5 songs right now already. That's quite a lot. I mean, that's like half the record.
Yeah,
and the songs are all really great. I don't even know which one I like the most, but talk to me about this whole idea. Did you make the record obviously pre-pandemic? You didn't know this was going to happen. Talk to me about the whole thing of putting together this album.
It was really, honestly, it was pretty thematic. I think once we figured out, like, it's been 4 years since we made a record, so there was lots of songs floating around for a while. But it took sort of us sort of figuring out what the record was centered around. You know, I always talk about that you need windows into the house before you can get in. And it just felt like we were waiting on that. And what really the out of body concept was kind of twofold for me. It was like very, mental health in a way. Like I deal with a lot of anxiety and those kind of things. And watching my 2 little kids, you know, start to, like, they have none of that. they might have a little, but for the most part, they walk into every room. You know, my little boys, you know, just walk in naked and with their arms out. They're just ready to roll, you know? And I'm like, I want a little bit of that, you know? And so there's a lot of this on the record about me kind of, wanting to get back to some of those things that, you know, being open and vulnerable. And it's also about kind of moving past your ego and that's what the out of body thing's about. Just like, I have such an awareness, you know, when I'm walking into a room of not being enough or all those kind of things. And I just like, I want to get past that more often. So I guess you could say it's like a soundtrack, to that process for people, hopefully.
Interesting. Yeah. Because I mean, you're the front man of a, you know, wildly successful band. You're playing stadium sometimes, you know, in front of thousands and thousands of people, yet it seems like at your core maybe you're a bit of an introvert, like, you know, you're
a bit
of a quiet guy.
No doubt.
Isn't that interesting how that can happen?
Yeah, it is. And you know, it's funny, people who know me, you know, before and outside of the stage, before, they're always, when they come see the concert the first time, they're like, what was that? They're like, who is that person up there? Because I am really quiet. And, you know, I mean, I'm literally so much of an introvert. Like if I'm at a wedding and there's 150 people there or something, like I have to go, you know, I said, this is too many people in this one room. I don't know if I can. So the idea that I can get up there with a guitar, it doesn't make a ton of sense. But it's actually been a really safe place for me. I think that's probably a lot of the introverts would say that about performing. I feel, you know, very much myself on the stage in that way, maybe more than most times.
Right. Well, you talk about your two boys, Wilder and Woods, and you've named your solo project after them, Wilder Woods. And, you know, you talk about your own anxieties and stuff. I mean, starting a solo project and not having a name to hide behind. Well, I guess you kind of did. But, you know, you don't have other people involved. Like, if it all goes south, it's you, right? I mean, there's so much anxiety, but yet you did it. It was very successful. You know, I mean, a lot of times solo projects from successful band lead singers, they serve a purpose maybe as a creative outlet or to change it up. But this has done really, really well. Did it exceed your expectations, you know, on the success of it?
Yeah, you know, in some ways. I mean, for me, my goal of it really was, like you're saying, it was a little bit more of just like, I want to finish this. You know, I just want to like go out and, you know, it's Need to Breathe is obviously my livelihood, my job. But Wilder Woods was this idea like I could do something that wasn't a means to an end and I didn't have to worry about whether it was successful or not. And that was really freeing, you know, it gave me some confidence, I think, going collaborating with different people and also taking other people's opinions on board a little more freely. You don't have to feel like you've got such a tight grip on everything. And that's been really cool to me coming back to the band now. I feel like I brought that spirit back. It's, you know, I think I had kind of lost that over time. Like it just felt like, you know, the big band heads, like it's a train that left the station. Now all the people, you know, in the audience really own this thing. And I'm just working for it in a way.
Right.
You know, so it was nice to come back and be like, no, you know what, this thing comes out of our voice and feelings and, you know, places that we are. And so I feel like we put more of that into this one.
I love it, man. No, I really, really like the solo stuff. It's really, really cool.
Thanks, man.
It's cool that you're able to have, you know, these two things going on now. Have you done much touring with Wilder Woods? I wasn't able to really find that.
Yeah,
that information.
Not a ton. I did an American tour, and I did UK actually.
Oh yeah.
So it was really fun for me. It was really challenging because you're so used to like kind of the things that work and developing a band. I mean, you know this, you know, but like an act even, it's just like, it takes so much time on the road. This was like our first show, I think, was a national TV. So, you know what I mean? It's like, that's totally backwards. It's not the way it's supposed to work.
I know.
And so I felt, you know, it was really strange, doing that, and it just took a lot of work and a lot of, but it also kind of took some of the sting out of doing that in the future. It feels like, man, if you can do it when you don't practice or where you haven't had a chance to practice or be around, you know, obviously a band you've been playing with for 20 years, you ought to be able to do it pretty confidently.
Well, say yes and figure it out later, I guess, right?
That's it.
So, I mean, I'll let you go in a minute. I got just one more question, and basically, I just want to know your take on, you know, moving forward. Obviously, we don't know what's going to happen, you know, when things are going to open back up or where or whatever. But, you know, personally, you know, with your brother leaving the band just a few months ago, you know, you guys are going to get back in the bus. You're going to be doing shows again. What's that going to be like? I mean, just with the whole future, do you have any insight on, you know, on what that's going to be like for you guys?
Man, yeah. I mean, I think for us, yeah, I think we really want to be on the responsible side of it. I feel like we have such a relationship with our fans. We always felt like we couldn't afford to go in and have a bad show. You know, we've obviously had some, but it always felt like, man, if you want this to actually work, you have to kill it when you play Chicago every time, you know? And I think we're taking that thinking into this a little bit where it's like, yeah, the fans would want to see you, but could you do a show like you know you can, you know? Or is this like a little bit handicapped by what's going on? So I think for us, that's what we're kind of waiting on is like, we want to be able to fully go. And I think every band is different though. You know, so like if it makes sense, you know, to go out there and do it stripped down or do it a different way, then that's great. It's fine. And you know, I think at some point it will be people's choice. But right now it's so murky, as you know. I think at some point if there is a vaccine out there and people will decide if they take it or they don't take it, but then it won't be our responsibility to keep them safe like it is now. You know what I mean? And I think at some point, I do think shows will come back. What I know is just from talking to people and even myself, the appetite for live music, is going to be so strong. And I think that's going to be really, really fun and cool. I think there will be a heightened energy to shows that people just, you know, it's just like anything, it parties too. It'll be like, but I just think the human interaction, that the thing that we always love but maybe took for granted, when it comes back, I think it'll be awesome.
Right. No, like it's just like you know, I love going to the movies, and our movie theaters just opened up. I live in Canada. Our movie theaters just opened up this weekend, and I was like, fuck it, let's go. Like, there's only three movies playing, one of them SpongeBob. Yeah. I'm like, I don't care. Just, you know, just I just want to get in back into some kind of, you know, normalcy. Because, you know, I'm used to going to the movies, like, you know, a couple times a month, maybe two, three times a month, and I love that. And I haven't done that in 5 months. So it's true. Like, I think the same thing will happen with concerts when they come back, and I wish you guys all the best. It's really great to have you on the show, and I also want to shout out your foundation to needtobreathecares.org. With everything going on out there in the world right now, you guys are trying to make a difference, and that is really, really cool as well. I encourage people to check that out.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that.
Anything else to tell the people?
No, man, that's it.
All right.
Awesome, man.
We did.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Bear, thanks so much.
Of course. No worries. Thanks for having me.
So there it is with Bear. What a nice guy. What a crazy, interesting life this guy has had. He has done a lot of stuff. And the new Need to Breathe record, Out of Body, is out right now. Just came out just last week. It's a slamming album. So much great material on this. They push the boundaries. And I really do like the concept and the themes that they have within this record. I think everybody can get something out of this. All right, well, another reminder, if you like the show, check out the All Access Club. If you don't want to do that, share this episode, tell a friend, tell a loved one, write a review on iTunes. The show will always be free, and that is all I ask. Make sure you are subscribed. I will see you next week. I'll leave you with a tune. Here is Who Am I by Need to Breathe on Lead Singer Syndrome. Peace and love. See you next week.
White lies and desperation, hard times and conversations. No one should ever love me like you do. Sometimes my bad decisions define my false suspicions. No one should ever love me like you do. While I'm on this road, you take my hand. Somehow you really love who I really am. I push you away, still you won't let go. You grow your roses on my barren soul. Who am I? Who am I? Who am I? To be loved by you. Who am I? Who am I? Who am I? To be loved by you. Who am I? Who am I? Who am I? To be loved by you. Who am I? Who am I? Who am I? Last night, confidence was shaking. My old, my past was saying, no one should ever love me like you do. Tree wreck.